Everybody loves chalupas. Everybody loves them now. If you wanna have chalupas, we're the ones to show you how. Hey everybody, this is Rish Outfield. This is the Rish Outcast. It's funny I said everybody as though there's more than one person listening. Would be nice to have more than me listen. And I only listen because I have to edit it. And every time I cut out an you hear those obnoxious clicks. Maybe it would be better to do as Big does and just not edit anything. And there's tons of and and god-awful noises and farting and profanity like you wouldn't believe. I don't know. I think the best solution would be to figure out a way to edit things so it's not noticeable. Right now I'm not able to do that, but that's probably just because I'm used to editing a certain way, and I don't know. There's got to be a solution. Anyhow, this is Rish Outfield, and I don't have an agenda today. I'm in the car. Usually I record when I'm going to meet Big. It's a tradition. It's a tradition that I record on my way to meet with Big. It's just, I'm in the car. I know I'm going to have a very short drive. And usually I've got podcasting on my mind because that's why I go to meet Big. Okay, enough. Jeez. That guy was never going to let up. But Big and I, we saw that movie, The Martian, today. Which is ancient history for you guys. But holy cow, it's a good movie, huh? And we were talking about how the writer of The Martian self-published his book, and apparently somebody picked up publishing rights after he'd self-published it and sold a bunch of copies, and then Ridley Scott got the rights to the movie, and here we are, a hit movie, just a couple years later, and Big and I were talking about how great that would be to just have a success story like that. Because he said, you know, even if he doesn't own his book anymore, if somebody else owns it now and he never makes another dime from it, which is unlikely, you know, he can write another book. And because he's the writer of The Martian, that's going to be an instant bestseller. It's just an enviable place to be. And so we talked about writing. We talked about podcasting, but not really podcasting so much as, you know, being writers and being creative people and doing series of books. My mom was talking about a newspaper article she read. I guess it was an interview with this guy who has written a bunch of books locally. And she said that he said that the first book was really hard to write. You know, he had to put a lot of effort in it and really concentrate and create a world and rules and all that stuff. He says, but the other four books in the series just wrote themselves. Just so easy. He didn't even have to put any effort. They wrote themselves. And oh my goodness. When I heard that, I thought, wow, how great would that be? And I'm naive, but I'm not that naive. I know they didn't write themselves. And when somebody says that it wrote itself, don't take that literally. But that something isn't like pulling teeth or having a baby sideways every time, when it's a fairly painless process or it's a joy to write, that sort of thing is nice and would be nice if it were a whole novel. And so I just thought about that. I mean, he and I talked a little bit about series of novels, and you know, he has this idea for The Gauntlet, which he's had for months now, and that was supposed to be the novel that he wrote in the summertime, and here it is, you know, the end of the year, and he still hasn't written it. But he was talking about story points and, you know, I think it would be really neat if this happened, and what about this idea, which do you like better? And at some point he said, you know, I think if I could just finish this one, the next one would be so much easier to write, and, you know, I could write several adventures of the gauntlet kind of thing. And I was jealous of him. I thought that was a cool place to be, especially if he could actually write this darn book and then go on to the next one. And yeah, at one point he said, gosh, I wish I could just have some, I could tell somebody my idea and have them write it. We had our buddy Ian that we went to school with, who was Big's best friend growing up. He was like that. He would have an idea for something, and he didn't have the ability or tenacity or mindset or whatever it is to write it himself, but he'd like to have somebody else write it. And that makes for a really good producer when you can do that. And Big said that, oh gosh, it would be so great to have somebody else to do that. And I thought, well, I would rather write the gauntlet than write my novel idea. But I didn't volunteer to do it because it would destroy our friendship. And at some point, the gauntlet would cease to be Big Anklevich's and it would become mine. And that's inevitable because I would be the one writing it. And what I really want is an idea for a series and then the drive to just start writing it. But that's going to take some work. They don't write themselves. And that's fine. If they did write themselves, then everybody would. I mean, even though it seems like everybody self-publishes and everybody is a writer, it's still hard. It's still work. And the sad truth is I've got stuff. I've got ideas. I've got a couple of short stories in a series that I wrote where it was never even meant to be a series. It was just, I started writing it and I realized, holy cow, this has franchise potential, which I never actually used that phrase. It's just thought it would be funny to say. It wasn't, but I thought it would be. And I never even typed that up. It's still in that notebook sitting on my computer, buried by, you know, 10 pounds of other junk. What I need more than the idea for a franchisable property is just the drive to take the things that I have written and put them out there and then put out the next thing and then write something new and put it out there. And boy, I must sound like a broken record, guys. And that's too bad. I've been at this a while and I've never learned anything. When I say I've never learned anything, but I've never learned to just say, this is good. And if you disagree, well, maybe you'll think the next one is good, but I think it's good and I'm putting it out there and it deserves to be out there. Here, $2.99, and then I'll go on to the next one. I don't know why I'm incapable of doing that. I shouldn't be. Anyhow, the whole reason I turned this thing on was A, I had it. But two, I talked to Big about writing and about being a novelist and self-publishing and millions of dollars and boobies for quite a while. I like it when we get together and we talk about creative things because I come out of it with a drive to work on something, to be creative, to collaborate or, you know, do extra podcast episodes or wouldn't it be funny if I wrote this and it ends up a sketch or stuff like that. It's just, it's nice to be around creative people. It feeds your own creativity. And as soon as we parted, I thought, gosh, I'm really amped up about writing. I want to be a writer. I want to share my writing. I want to be a man someday. And so I thought I would turn this device on and talk about that. And maybe I have. One other thing, though. We didn't have time to do a 13 Nights of Halloween this year. It's a marathon that we've done a couple of years in a row. Where we do 13 episodes in a row daily in honor of the Halloween season. And last year and the year before, I ended the marathon with a story that I'd written. Gosh, it might have been last year and the year before that that I did that. That's kind of amazing. And this year we just haven't had time. I've had just so much more work. And I've been trying to do my own podcast and such. You'd be proud of me if you saw how many episodes of The Rish Outcast are done and edited and ready to go. Because I assume that November is just going to be hellish for me and for Big. November is sweeps month in the TV business. And so he tends to have to work long hours and have projects that take several days. And November is always really, really difficult for me and my schedule. So I thought, okay, when November comes, I'm going to have episodes in the can that are ready to go. And you'd be proud of me for that, is what I was saying. But I haven't had a lot of time to write because I've been focusing on the podcasting. And I've probably said this a bunch of times before. I'll say it one more time. Podcasting and writing and doing audiobooks all fill my need for creativity. They all fill it. So it doesn't matter if I'm working on something that somebody else wrote or if I'm working on my own writing or, you know, I'm doing an audiobook of my own writing. It all fills that void, that need. And so that's a good thing, but it's also a bad thing if I'm doing stuff for other people and don't feel the need to do my own stuff because, yeah, I'm creatively satiated because of it. So anyhow, you know, I got these Rish Outcasts done, and it means that I haven't done much writing. I'm trying to think of the last thing that I wrote. It doesn't matter. The point I was going to make was that we didn't do 13 Nights of Halloween, and I feel a little bit bad about that because I try to write a scary story every October. It's a tradition. It's at least 10 years old. Probably going on 15 now, where every single October I write an October scary story. And this year I didn't do it. I was busy, I suppose. But in the back of my mind, I think, you know, it's not too late. I still could do something. And what I wanted to do was I wanted to write a story, try and make something scary that isn't scary. Like I did that with moths a couple years ago, and the result was uneven. I don't think it was a great story, but, you know, moths are inherently not scary. But I thought it would be cool if I could come up with another thing that's not scary and see what I could do with it. But that doesn't that doesn't go anywhere. It would be great if I said, okay, and here's my idea. What do you think? Slinkies. Slinkies aren't scary, so I'm going to make a horror story about slinkies. Slinkies that like testicles. It's kind of pointless where I've just been talking. I did want to say, though, that it's good to get together with my friend and talk about writing. And it's good to want to write. So, oh yes, there you go. I hadn't wanted to write, and now I do. So maybe something good will come of this. It's hard to say. I can't really see the future. My crystal ball has so many fingerprints on it. It's like a dang smartphone, where it's just like, ew, how did it get that dirty? Guys, yuck. Anyhow, I'm going to leave you with something. I'll give you a little treat. I had an idea the other day. Okay, today. Of a song that I thought would be really fun to do. And so maybe I'll do that now. But this has just been a little short episode. Hopefully not too painful. I've been Rish Outfield. And fare thee well. Shoot, this is something I thought I did a long time ago. Maybe I did it and I forgot that I did it. You ever had that happen? Don't get old, kids. But here goes.
Hey, Janet.
Yes, Brad?
I really admire the skillful way you beat the other girls to the bride's bouquet.
Oh, Brad.
The river was deep, but I swam it.
Janet?
The future is ours, so let's plan it.
Janet?
So please don't tell me to can it.
Janet?
I've one thing to say, and that's damn it, Janet. I love you. The river was long, but I ran it.
Janet.
There's a fire in my heart and you're fanning.
Janet.
If there's one fool for you, then I am
Janet.
It. Now I've one thing to say, and that's damn it, Janet. I love you. Here's a ring to prove that I'm no joker. There's three ways that love can grow.
Really, what are they?
That's good, bad, and mediocre.
Spell it for me.
Oh, J-A-N-E-T, I love you so.
Oh, this is nicer than Betty Monroe had.
Oh, Brad.
Now we're engaged and I'm so glad.
Oh, Brad.
That you've met Mom and you know Dad.
Oh, Brad.
I've one thing to say and that's, oh, Brad, I'm mad for you too. Oh, Brad.
Oh, damn it.
I'm mad.
Oh, Janet.
For you,
I love you too.
There's one thing left to do,
and that's go see the man who began it,
Janet.
When we met in his science exam, it,
Janet,
made me give you the eye and then panic,
Janet.
Now I've one thing to say, and that's damn it, Janet, I love you. Damn it, Janet.
Oh, Brad, I'm mad.
Damn it, Janet.
I love you.
It's not you, it's me.
So the Rish Outcast is produced under a Creative Commons attribution, no derivatives, 3.0 license. So you can share it with your little friends, but you're not allowed to take credit for it or sell it or change it. You know, I think this is the first one where I didn't use Kevin MacLeod's music. Well, it can't be the first one. There have been others where I've not presented a story. Although, I know we're at the end of the show. I was doing something. You know, if there's music on the radio or if there's a television on or the internet in front of me, I'm not thinking creatively. But if there's silence or I'm outdoors, you know, something like that, then my mind is able to just imagine stuff. And I guess it was last night. I thought it was today. Last night I was at work and I got this idea a few years ago. Wow, it's been a decade now. I went to the Fangoria Weekend of Horrors convention, is I think what they called it, in Los Angeles. Well, it was in Pasadena. And I think I talked about it earlier in the year with Big on That Gets My Goat. I've always considered myself a big horror fan. I love horror movies at least. But once I got there, I realized, no, I'm not a horror fan. These are horror fans. They're people that just eat, drink, and, you know, excrete that genre. And they had a love for horror and an encyclopedic knowledge that I don't understand and could never have. Interesting. I liked the Star Trek convention I went to around the same time. Holy cow, it was 2002. That's a long time ago now. A little more. I didn't feel quite so out of place. Because I didn't have any tattoos of Bruce Campbell or Leatherface, or, you know, I didn't have a t-shirt with Tina Gray being sliced open from A Nightmare on Elm Street on it or anything like that. I liked horror, and I was fond of the genre and the movies ever since I was a little kid, but I didn't worship at the altar of Kane Hodder or anything like these people did, and so I felt out of place. Whereas, at least with Star Trek, you know, I had seen every episode of the original series, and I had been watching Next Generation the night it aired, you know what I mean? So I was a big Star Trek fan. But I always thought it would be neat to do a story set at one of these conventions. Oh, and you know what? I told you guys that story when I did Unconventional, which for you was like two episodes ago, but for me was, you know, 8, 9, 10 months ago. Okay, I wrote Unconventional, and that's about a comic book convention, and, you know, that's fine. But while I was at work yesterday, I thought about that horror convention, and I got an idea for a story. I thought, what if there was an actor? You know what? Let's say he wasn't even an actor. He was a
an electrician or a VCR repairman or a sanitation worker or something like that who got hired to work on a horror movie 20 years ago, 25 years ago, 30 years ago, whenever it was, you know, in the mid-80s or something like that. And he played the monster. He was unrecognizable. You know, he had prosthetics on and a mask on and all that. You know, it's something very similar to Jason Voorhees. And he never worked again. He never acted again. Well, you know, it's not a big hit movie like Friday the 13th was. It is something much smaller. A sleeper, as they used to say, which was when a movie, you know, arrived with no expectations. And, oh, wait, you know, a sleeper is a hit. Well, there, you know, something, one of those movies that wasn't successful on its first release, but later gained a cult following. And maybe they call those cult films. But let's say that, you know, in the intervening 25 years, 30 years, this movie has become really, really famous. Maybe it wasn't until the internet came along that suddenly people were like, oh, you know what movie is really, really cool? And yeah, it's based on some kind of legend or something like that of a creature, a demon or a monster, a ghost or whatever. And this guy just lived his life. Then suddenly he got a call, and let's say that it was from a booking agent or something like that that said, hey, did you play, you know, the creature from the Brown Depths? And he's like, what? Oh, in that movie? Yeah, that was me. And the guy says, you know, how would you like to come out to New Jersey or Pasadena or someplace like that, Denver? You know, we've got a horror convention. We will fly you over. We'll put you up for, you know, 2-3 nights, take care of all your meals, just meet some of your friends, answer a few questions, you know, do a Q&A, kind of sign some autographs. What do you think about that? And he goes, oh, I'm not a movie star. I'm not a, you know, I'm a sanitation worker. They just saw me. You know, one of my rounds was this guy that wanted to be a movie maker. And, you know, while I was getting his trash, he came running out. He was in his bathrobe and he said, oh, ho, look at, stop. How tall are you? And I told him, you know, I was 6'10". And he said, how much do you weigh? And I, you know, I told him I was 3'10". And he said, how would you like to be in the movies? And I wasn't interested, but he offered me this job. He said that maybe I could make up to $1,000 on it if I was willing to be this monster in his movie. And so I did that, and, you know, I don't know that I ever even got paid. And the guy is just like, wow, that story is great. See, that's exactly the kind of thing that these fans would eat up. People just go crazy if you tell that story and maybe a couple others of how how did you shoot the decapitation scene? How did you shoot the rising from hell scene? You know, that sort of thing. And the guy goes, well, fans? There are fans of that movie? He's like, oh yeah, it's huge. It's as big as The Room now, or Troll 2. And the guy goes, I don't know what that is. He says, hey, just say that you'll do it and you'll find out how big a deal it is. So anyhow, he goes there. Let's say he gets flown to Pasadena and he's at this convention and he comes out and there are people that cheer and just go absolutely nuts about him in this film. And he comes out and he's going to, you know, do a Q&A and the first question, let's say the very first question is, what do you think about the curse of Demon of the Brown Depths? And he goes, curse? He goes, yeah, what do you think of that? He goes, my only curse is, you know, I never got paid. And they all, like, nervously laugh. And the interviewer says, do you honestly not know? The director of that movie was murdered. You know, he came out to Hollywood. He was set to make this big, exciting movie, and then he was murdered, and the screenwriter killed himself, and the lead actress OD'd on, well, it did. The lead actress disappeared. Some people say she was murdered too, and he said, well, no, I didn't, I haven't heard of any of that. And then, seriously, where have you been all these years? And they're like, well, I've been in Sioux Falls, same place where we shot the movie. The thing is, the story of this movie was based on a real legend. And what happened was the creature, the demon that it was about, did not take kindly to them making a movie about his existence, about his unlife. But this guy that played the creature, he was uncredited. It's, you know, it said the demon of Brown, demon of the Brown Depths as himself kind of thing or something, you know? And so all these years later, our main character finally gets a target painted on him. And I was thinking it would be interesting if he's doing a signing downstairs and there is a big long line. And of course, everybody's just like, was that a joke? You really haven't heard of the curse? And, you know, they ask him, did anything untoward ever happen on the set kind of thing? And he doesn't have any good stories. It's not that kind of movie. It's not Poltergeist. But it is a little bit like that, though. They said there is a Poltergeist curse, right? So he's signing these autographs downstairs, and the demon comes. It's one of the people in the line. And what if nobody else can see it but him? I don't know. That's silly. Or what if the demon is the only one that's not got long hair and nose piercings and several tattoos and, you know, a t-shirt with Dead Alive on it? The demon comes and it stands out like a sore thumb because it's a pale, beautiful, like, angel-looking person. And it comes up to, you know, to ask for his autograph, and it says, you were the one in the suit. I've been looking for you for 31 years. And it smiles, and its jaw, like, unhinges, and its eyes go back in its head, and he realizes this is the demon, this is that thing that he portrayed. Well, okay, you know, let me just stop right there. Because I was thinking last night of how you could defeat the demon. And maybe you can't. But you set it up, of course, in the movie within the story, how they defeated the demon. And I just thought, well, maybe we can fool the demon rather than, you know, destroy the demon. Although you sure as hell could just end the story with the jaw unhinging and the eyes going back in the head. That's the easy way. I don't know. I thought, what a cool idea for a story. I mean, we need to get California Rish out here to say what a cool idea for the story, because I don't say those kind of things. But it's something that I'd like to write. Boy, I got a lot of hours at work this week. Dang it. But that's a good thing and a bad thing, because a lot of hours means a lot of time to think about writing this thing. Maybe tomorrow I can jot down some ideas and flesh out how I want this thing to end. But anyway, I just wanted to share that with you. It's a thing that jumped into my head. I think I'm going to write it, and I'm excited about it. I'm enthusiastic. And you know, that was something that I was talking about in this episode, is you need a little bit of drive. So bug me about it. If you listened this far and you think that that's a cool idea, bug me about it, and I will tell you how it went. Good night.